Welcome to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha, a podcast for and about women of color in STEM. These women are brave, beautiful, and brilliant. Their stories deserve and need to be heard. Their voice strong, their message clear, their experiences priceless. Now let's welcome this wonderful winning woman of color to the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next best episode of Stemming in Stilettos. Y'all, when I tell you, I'm really excited about today's episode and about today's guest. I feel like I've probably been cyber stalking her for a while. She doesn't know that. She just found that out. For quite some time. So we have Dr. Sabrina Collins on the show today as our guest. I admire the work that you are doing and all of the things that you have done. And so I followed you for quite some time, and I'm really, 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 really happy that you said yes when I reached out to you about being a guest on the show. So I really want to welcome you to the show and thank you for just agreeing.
Thank you so much for having me. And happy new year. I know it's February. Happy Black History Month. And just honored, you know, to have a conversation about my STEM story.
Okay, so you guys already know how we start the show, and we will do this one no differently. So, Dr. Collins, tell us your STEM story.
Well, basically, I actually began my STEM story as a community college student. So I graduated from a Detroit public high school, Henry Ford High School, many years ago. I just reached AARP status. It's about discounts, right?
I hear it. I'm not mad at it.
I enrolled at Highland Park Community College because my mother, Nancy, was a secretary in the nursing department. So I was able to take advantage of the tuition assistance benefit offered to employees and their families. And I enrolled in a chemistry class for non-science majors, thought it was real easy. So I said, if this is all there is to being to chemistry, I will just be a chemist. The classes got harder. And what I loved is dimensional analysis, which is nothing but algebra. So I'm a proud nerd. So I earned an A in the course. And it actually gave me some confidence that I could do the work. And so my goal was to earn my degree in chemistry and live in Detroit for the remainder of my life working as a chemist. But eventually I enrolled at Wayne State University, earned my undergraduate degree in chemistry in 1994. And while I was there, I received a scholarship or a fellowship from the National Institutes of Health entitled the MARC program. And I was able to conduct research for the first time in a chemistry laboratory. And my research mentor at the time, Dr. Regina Zybuk, who still teaches at Wayne State, you know, talk to me about graduate school because I hadn't thought about pursuing a doctorate in chemistry and learning that you can earn a PhD without taking out a bunch of loans, you know, for grad school. And I think if a lot of young people knew that, that you can pursue a doctorate in a STEM discipline and not take out significant loans, you know, maybe more of them would do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking it. If you want to be a medical doctor and those kinds of things, just understand that there are loans that you're going to have to pay back. If that's your passion, do that. So I was accepted at The Ohio State University for graduate school. Yes, I grew up in Michigan and I went to Ohio State. Don't judge me, whatever.
Well, you about to start the Civil War.
I really am. And, you know, my little sister, Demetria, she actually attended University of Michigan. We're about 10 years apart in age. So she took it to a whole new level. But anyway, while I was in grad school, I actually decided I wanted to pursue being a college professor, particularly teaching at a historically Black college or university. And I never attended one, but I always wanted to teach at one. And so I did a postdoc at Louisiana State, focusing on heart disease research after graduating. And then actually, while I was a postdoc, I read this book that was published by the American Chemical Society entitled Careers for Chemists, A World Outside the Lab. Mm. And it really should be required reading, I think, for any STEM major. And it talked about how you can use your degree and work in science journalism or patent law or forensics, working in a museum, all of these things that were never discussed when I was in grad school. And so as a result of that, I ended up accepting a position as a writer and an editor with AAAS in Washington, D.C. for about a year. So I love writing and editing because of that experience, you know, to this very day.
Wow.
And but I, my goal was to be a college professor. So I accepted a position at Claflin University in Orangeburg, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss being on that HBCU campus and that soul food in the faculty lounge and that sweet tea, all of that stuff. But my point is that the doctorate degree provided me a number of different career paths. You know, it's your union card, right? And to right. a number of careers. And so I had the opportunity to work at University of Washington. I then returned to the classroom at the College of Worcester in Ohio. And prior to my current role as executive director of the Marburger STEM Center at Lawrence Tech, I was director of education at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History in Detroit. And prior to the new museum opening up in the in DC, the Smithsonian, the Wright Museum was the largest institution focused on the African American experience. And it was, you know, being able to work with a number of fabulous museum educators to tell our story, you know, was just a wonderful experience. Oh, wow. But I miss being in an academic environment. And when I saw the job announcement for my current role, I said, this is for me. And it'll be 5 years, July 1st of this year that I've been in this role. And I'm having a lot of fun. So that's kind of my little summary.
Yeah, that's a great summary. I want to go back and sort of talk through your progression from community college to Wayne State. Like, what happened in there?
Well, you know, what was interesting. I always wanted to attend Wayne State. You know, it's a R1 institution in downtown Detroit. And well, I was, because there, you know, there are a number of other institutions in the state.
Right.
But that was my goal. And it was in my hometown. Because initially, I really wanted to attend Spelman College as an undergrad. However, I didn't necessarily have high grades coming out of high school. And I certainly didn't have the financial resources, mm-hmm. you know, to move to Atlanta and do that. And in fact, I didn't really start thinking about college until probably my junior year in high school.
Mm, okay.
And, you know, both my parents were saying, look, you know, you can easily go to Highland Park Community College and earn your first college degree. So I tell students all the time, there are different paths to success for everybody.
Right. You know?
And community college was that pathway for me. And so it was just a natural progression to go from Highland Park to Wayne State. And I was so excited when I got in there and just, you know, absolutely thrilled, you know, to be earning a degree.
So I used to teach at a community college. The truth for me was, is that community college, I didn't even think about community college when I was coming out of high school. And the even funnier thing is that both of my parents went and attended and graduated from community colleges there and started their careers. My dad was a diesel mechanic, and my mom is a surge tech. And so, or she, that's where she started. And so both had successful community college careers, and that launched them into doing the thing that they, you know, they did, they've been doing for the rest of their lives. And so it just wasn't talked about. It was like, you're going to go to 4-year school, or you're going to go to this college, and you're going to, you know, you're going to do these things. And so when I literally went to our local community college here for a summer job and never left. Like 2 weeks into the summer job, they asked me to do it full time. And I was teaching engineering classes and engineering technology, CAD classes, those kinds of things. Uh-huh. And that's when it sort of opened my eyes to this hidden gem.
Right.
It's incredible the work they do at community college, the opportunities that are available to students in so many different ways, from certificates to full-on degrees that can launch them into, you know, really lucrative careers, or just doing the thing that's that passion project for them. It's like you can walk away with these skills that you can do a lot of things with. So I'm really glad that you talked about that experience that you had there and how it, you know, helped, you know, form, shape you and launch you into your next steps.
You know, and what was really interesting is because I love writing, creative writing and that sort of thing. And I was taking an English class, you know, my first semester there, and we had to turn in papers and that sort of thing. So I wrote this paper that I thought was just fabulous. Okay. And I get this paper back and it wasn't a fabulous grade. So it dawned on me, okay, you got to step it up. You know, this is no longer high school. And the other thing too, which was interesting, you know, community colleges, they have such a diverse population. Mm-hmm. So it's not just 17, 18 year olds, you know, pursuing a college degree. I was in classes with people who were grown, 30 years old, you know, taking a class because it would lead to a promotion, you know, on a job or a pay raise or whatever. So as a 17, 18 year old, I had to grow up really fast in a classroom with grown people.
Right.
I wanted to fit in too, you know, so it really, it helped me, helped me as far as maturity. I was no longer surrounded by people just my age. I was surrounded by grown folks.
Right. That's very real. I mean, I always tell people this story. When my first year teaching, I had, and I still remember them, Darlene and Sean. Darlene was 70 years old. Her husband had, she recently become a widower, or widow. And her husband had left her his business, like she inherited, and he was a carpenter. Mm-hmm. And so she had been helping him, but she hadn't really been on the actual, like the work side. She was more on the administration side, but now she was hiring, you know, contractors to do all this work, and she had no foundation for it. So what she really wanted to do was learn CAD, learn how to, you know, to scale and measurements and all of those things, because she was like, I think people are taking me because they know I don't know it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I have to trust and believe that, you know, everybody has my best interest at heart. And she was like, but I need to have my best interest at heart. So she came to take this CAD class and left with a full on degree. But that was her goal. And she's in class with this 18 year old. And when I tell you, he was not the most mature kid. Mm-hmm. He just wasn't. He just was. And he was used to being, he was the last kid. And he had four sisters, mm-hmm. and I mean, his whole demeanor was like, you know, I would say stuff to him and he'd just be like, well, I'll get to it. And I'm like, okay, so the deadline is this day. So you get into it. You need to get to it by that deadline, right? He did not. It was like everything was an option for him. But she took him under her wing and literally raised him for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. They took every single class together. They sat together. They studied together. She actually ended up hiring him in her business.
Wow.
Because of that relationship. And he matured in such a way that it was remarkable to see, because I kept thinking, I don't know about this kid. I don't see where this is going. Oh, for sure. But you're so right when you say that community colleges help mature you in that way. That's just
I grew up real fast. You know, I was a pretty level-headed kid, but being in that environment, I had to grow up really fast.
Yeah, because I mean, those people aren't playing. They're like, listen, I'm here for a thing and you are not going to, you know, stand in the way of that. So, you know, you're going to have to come on with the tide of it all. So that's good. So then when you got to to Wayne, what was that experience like? So did you took some of that knowledge you had from the community college to the 4-year school, and did it change the way you viewed things?
It did. For one thing, Wayne State obviously was a lot bigger class, you know, so I wasn't in these small classes, you know, anymore. So that was a transition, you know, and I love smaller schools, you know, it's something about being in small class sizes. But, you know, what really helped me, my aunt, Kitty, her name is Karen, we call her Kitty. She told me about a scholarship opportunity that was available at Wayne State. So this minority access to research careers, where, you know, they would pay your tuition. You would get a monthly stipend. And you obviously had to maintain at least a 3.0 GPA, and you would get some laboratory experience. So this is the National Institutes of Health. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what do I have to lose? Right. So I applied for it. And I got accepted, you know, and so that was extremely helpful, because that first year at Wayne State, I was still relying on Pell Grants. I was working as a cashier. I worked as a cashier at the bookstore, worked at as a cashier at a deli. So I paid my dues. Mm-hmm. So and Pell Grants don't cover everything, you know, so. So when I got that scholarship, if it hadn't been for that, when my tuition was covered, I know I wouldn't be sitting here, you know, today, had it not been for me getting that associate degree and that financial support. And so I was able to focus on my classes, able to work in a lab and get some experience. And I was getting a small stipend, and I just stayed focused. And so it transformed my thinking about what was possible. And that was also because of that NIH MARC fellowship. That was the first time I participated in a scientific conference. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that I actually got on a commercial a plane. I flew to Bethesda, Maryland, you know, on the NIH, you know, campus, and met other students like myself who were majoring in chemistry or biology or psychology. And we were presenting research posters on our projects. And so that opened up a whole world for me, what was possible. Right. So that's when I started thinking about, you know what, I'm going to grad school and I'm going to earn my doctorate, you know. And I haven't looked back since. So going from that Wayne State to, well, going from that community college to Wayne State, that just transformed me.
I love it.
And into what was possible.
Talk to me about what it was like being a Black woman in that space.
You know, what was interesting when I was at Wayne State, I discovered an organization called NOVACHE, mm-hmm. National Organization for the Professional Advancement of Black Chemists and Chemical Engineers, which was established back in like 1974.
Wow.
But they had professional chapters and student chapters around the country, and they still obviously exist today. And so Wayne State had a NOVACHE chapter. You know, so I ended up, you know, joining this chapter with other chemistry and chemical engineering majors. But Wayne State also had, at the time, the advisor for this NOVACHE chapter was Dr. Joe Francisco, African-American. He actually became a chemist, actually became the second African-American to be president of the American Chemical Society.
Mm.
And so, but he was the advisor for the NOVACHE chapter. Another, Dr. Keith Williams, who was on a staff in the chemistry department, served as a mentor to me. So Wayne State had, so you had African-American faculty and staff. And I was engaging with other African-American chemistry majors. So it created this environment, you know, for support. And I attended my first NOVACHE, you know, conference when I was a grad student at Ohio State. And so that the NOVACHE family, and I'm still very connected to them to this day, was very supportive. And you develop these lifelong friendships. And within NOVACHE, there's a group of young ladies that I refer to as my personal board of directors.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And these women, so they all have graduate degrees in chemistry or chemical engineering, material science. And we basically are a support system for each other, you know. And so this has gone on 20 plus years, the relationship with these women. And what's wonderful about them is that they provide genuine support when you are going through career challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And we celebrate the highs and the milestones when we get them.
Yes,
and
love it.
They were tremendously important to me when I was going through my own career challenges of being denied tenure as an assistant professor. So as you can imagine, so this was at the College of Worcester, which is a wonderful institution. I have great friends that are still teaching there, and I'm in contact with them. So as you can imagine, something like that is just absolutely devastating and hurtful.
Yeah.
But you can learn something from every situation.
Correct.
Whether it's there's a lesson in everything, whether it's good or bad. And what I learned is that you cannot run from who you are. You have to be exactly who you are and focus on why you are here, you know, on this earth. And so I remember being pretty down about it. And one of my BOT members said to me, she called me one day after the tenure denial, and I was watching television. I was watching Young and the Restless, which, you know, I love Victor and Nikki Newman and all of that. So
I'm with you. We can talk offline later.
But this was during spring break. So I'm watching Young and the Restless. And she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm watching TV." She said, "I need you to turn off the television. And I want you to look at the tenure denial, the narrative, what's in there, and focus on the positives." And so I did, you know. And so even though it was a negative result, there was so much good in there. And so I basically used that as a guide for what I was going to do next. So it's, you know, and it was tremendously hard trying to get to that next step. But I had to sit down and reflect and be honest. And there was a whole lot of good in there. And I focused on that. And what I have always known is that what I need to be doing is being in a position that allows me to focus on STEM education, chemical education, and diversity, equity, and inclusion in STEM. That's where my heart is. mm-hmm. you know? And so at the time I went through it, I certainly didn't think it was a blessing, but it was, because I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing now as executive director of the Marburger STEM Center on the campus of Lawrence Tech, focusing on superhero science research. I mean,
love that.
Never would have thought about that.
No, I wrote down, and my listeners know I'm always taking notes. So I take notes for every guest, mainly so that, because of course, you know, writing helps you remember, but also because I don't want to miss anything. Like, there's so many nuggets that guests drop. And you just dropped a gem, that denial can be a guide to your passion and to your heart work. Instead of looking at the negative part of the denial, look at the gems that may be hidden within it, and pick that out and use that to help guide you forward. That was, I could be like, okay, and see you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the honest truth. And the thing is, and I'm not saying that it was easy. It wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, we all go through challenges, you know, in our careers or whatever, but the issue is, how are you going to respond to it? You know, right. So, and actually in January of 2019, I actually did an interview with Nature about, it was focused on bouncing back from a tenure denial, right. you know, a decision. And the thing is, one of the reasons why I decided to share my story, for one, I'm not mad at anybody. You know, it happened, but it put me on the path to doing the work that I'm doing now. But, you know, my pastor of my church in Cleveland once said, you know, stop holding your testimony. You got to share your testimony to help other people.
Yes.
You don't have to tell all of your business.
That's true.
But give them enough where they can say, you know what, Sabrina went through the same thing I'm going through, and she landed on her feet. I could do the same thing.
Yes.
And so that's what it is. You know, we do. I think all of us, we got a responsibility to share a testimony to help somebody. Because people need to know they are not the only ones going through a difficult situation. You know, they have to have examples of, okay, I can get through this.
Right.
It's hard, but I can persevere.
Right. No, totally agree. That's actually, you know, one of the reasons why I started this, you know, the podcast, is that we have to tell our stories. And I'm really clear that I would like for us to be able to tell stories for us, by us. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I mean, I feel like we would hold them better. We have lessons to learn from each other. We have plenty of lessons to learn from others, sure. 'Cause there's more of their stories that's out there and are known. But if we don't tell them, then who's going to tell?
Right.
So that's the whole reason behind, Stemming in Stilettos. So, and I, you know, really appreciate that you're telling that story, you're putting it out there, like, this is a thing that happened. It wasn't hard. It wasn't easy, but I persevered through it. And now look, you know, here I am doing these things. I think there's way more value in those words coming directly from you. Then hearing it sort of second hand, third hand, fourth hand, but directly from you. That's great. It's just great.
Thank you. I mean, people really need to, they want to see how you go through something.
Yes.
You know? That's the message. How do you go through something and then come out on the other side? Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, you can make a comeback without being hateful, you know,
yes.
You know, so I'm tremendously thankful for, you know, every experience I went through helped prepare me for this current role, you know, that yeah. I have, you know, I'm having so much fun.
So bring me up to today. So you were working at another museum. Tell me about that. And then to to what you're doing right now. Cause I know, I mean, I see some of the stuff that you guys are, like I said, I'm cyber stalking you. We can talk about that later. But so tell us, you know, give us the last little bit of the progression of what, you know, where you've been, how you, and what you're doing now.
Yeah. So what ended up happening after the tenure denial, I had to figure out what I was going to do next. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about me, I absolutely love history. I love history of science, creative writing, all of that. And there was a position for director of education available at the Charles H. Wright, the Wright Museum in Detroit. And so I saw it and I said, okay, is this an opportunity for me to return to my hometown? Right. You know, because I hadn't thought about returning to Detroit. But what I did, because I'm not a trained historian, mm-hmm. but I do write and publish these articles to celebrate women, celebrate the achievements and the intellectual contributions of women of people of color that are often overlooked in science textbooks and in the curriculum. And so when I interviewed for the position at the Wright Museum, that's what I emphasized. I'm not a historian, but here, you know, I focus on, you know, history of science.
Right.
And so at the museum, they had an exhibit celebrating our achievements, you know, in STEM. So I was able to focus on that kind of effort, plus social science outreach to K-12 audiences. And that was the first time that I was really working closely with teachers and students, you know, because you have school groups coming in for field trips. But I really miss being in an academic environment. And right. So when I saw the ad for this new position at Lawrence Tech, I said, that position is made for me. And I applied for it. And I joined Lawrence Tech in 2016, July 1st, 2016. And it's just been so enjoyable. Because one of the things about this role is that I get a chance to collaborate across disciplines. So as much as I love chemistry, and I do think it's the best discipline on the planet, my goal is to have as many people pursue chemistry as possible to be chemists. But I collaborate with my colleagues in humanities, mm-hmm. in engineering, architecture, and design. You know, and so it's and honestly, as a faculty member, I never would have imagined being able to collaborate, you mm-hmm. know, that way on projects. And so, for example, we published in 2018 the article Black Path of Vibranium and the Periodic Table.
I remember this.
And what's interesting, because prior to the movie coming out, I was not a fan of comic books or Marvel comics. And, you know, my sister Demetria encouraged me to go see it. So I go to the movies with two of my younger cousins and I'm watching a film. Of course, I'm enjoying it because Michael B. Jordan is in it, and you know, mm-hmm. and the awesome Chadwick Boseman.
Right.
And it occurs to me that the fictional African nation is thriving on the production and use of vibranium. And as a chemist, because I can't shut off my chemistry brain, I'm like, okay, if that element existed, where would it be in the periodic table? And mm-hmm. I kept asking myself that as I've watched this film. And when I went home that night, started writing out what I thought this paper should look like, sent an email to my buddy, Professor Appleby, the next morning. I said, hey, have you seen this film? Can you ask this as a question on your next exam? She did. We found out who the Marvel comic fans were in the department, used some of their responses for this paper, and it kind of exploded a little bit on Twitter. You know? And so as a result of that, and all we were doing was leveraging the popularity of the movie to get general chemistry students to think seriously about the arrangement of the periodic table. And the film, as you know, really provides a conversation about the important contributions of women and people of color in STEM.
Yes.
Shuri's character resonated with so many people. And it's an example of what's possible when everybody is included, when everybody has a seat at the table and a lab bench.
You know?
And that's what's key. And as a result of that, we ended up developing workshops and activities for middle school and high school students based on using this film. And most recently, I published a book chapter dedicated to the late Chadwick Boseman, describing how we have used his film. And I wanted to dedicate it to him just because of his amazing portrayal as T'Challa and Black Panther. Now, I was devastated when he passed because the movie made such an impact on me personally and professionally. So I just wanted to honor him in some way.
I read that article, and I saw the title, and I was like, I already know this is going to be good. Like, we're going to walk away with, like, you know, some really, really thoughtful, but like out of the box thinking about this. I agree. I thought it was great. And I was like, I can't wait to see where they go with this. I'm always a fan, even if I'm not participating, I'm always a fan of people who are trying to advance the cause of people of color in STEM, women of color in STEM also. So I was all about it. Shuri also was just, I looked at her and I was like, she is me, I am her. Because she reminded me of myself. And I always tell people, like, I was the girl who used to break up stuff and then try to fix it, right? Figure out how it worked and then fix it, right? Like, I feel like that was her whole childhood. And she was able to parlay that into a whole career in the lab. And so she was a chemist and a biologist and an engineer. And she was all the things, or are all the things. In one, you know, she was the embodiment of all those things and the possibility of it. And so that's what I loved about her and his acceptance of her brilliance.
Right.
And reliance on it was like, yes.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I love what you're doing. Continue to do that good work. Anytime you need a whatever. You got a fan in me, but you also have support out there.
Thank you.
So I, you know, like I said, I admire you so much. Can you tell us, you know, what's upcoming and then where people can find you?
So what's upcoming? So currently I am, I'm working on some new ideas for professional development workshops for K-12 teachers, educators. And I love working with teachers in the classroom. So that's one of the key things, developing more virtual workshops to engage middle school students and high school students. Because prior to the pandemic, we were doing in-person, you know, types of activities. We all had to pivot, you know.
Right.
And so that's where we are with staffing and priorities. With the STEM Center, but I can be reached if you go to the Lawrence Tech website, type in Marburger STEM Center, you know, the webpage will pop up, or I can be reached at scollins@ltu.edu.
Okay. So you guys got it. Go to the website, look up what's the name of the center, just so we can say it again.
The Marburger STEM Center.
Okay, Marburger STEM Center. You guys look her up there, or scollins@ltu.edu. Don't spam her, people, because I promise you that's not the look we want. That is not the look we want. Okay, so I have one last question for you, and it is, if you could go back in time and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give her and why?
That's a great question. And I would go back, let's say 10 years or even 20 years, and tell myself to sit down and start reflecting on what my purpose actually is.
Mm.
We actually most of us spend our entire lives trying to figure out what our purpose is, why we are here, you know, on this earth. And I know my purpose is to try to encourage and inspire as many young people as possible to pursue a STEM pathway. Now, as a Black woman in STEM, it's not easy. And we have to be honest with young people about that, but it can be rewarding. But the other point, too, when I talk to young people, you know, we often tell people just find your passions, identify your passions, and that'll guide you to a career. I tell young people to take it a little bit deeper than that. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself, what kind of impact do I want to make in my neighborhood, in my city, in my state, and in the world? And when you do that, then you'll be able to figure out what your path actually is.
So this question, what kind of impact do you want to make on your community in the world? Like, I'm like, right. That's a brilliant question. And I'm not sure that's going to have a person really doing a deep dive into the different areas of their life. But right. I think it's really smart.
And yeah. I mean, yeah, it causes. And I would ask myself those questions 10, 20 right. years ago to help, you know, figure this out.
Right. I hear it. All right. Well, thank you. Just thank you for your time today. I can't even tell you enough how much I appreciate it. And I'm sure that my audience have walked away with a lot of little nuggets. You know, I'm always happy and pleased when I have a guest on that doesn't mind sharing her story. So
thank you again. Thank you so much. And thank you to your listeners. I appreciate it.
All right, you guys. So that concludes today's episode of Stemming in Stilettos. And you guys always know where to find me. The podcast is anywhere you listen to podcasts. If you are looking for Dr. Tasha, you can find Dr. Tasha from her website, www.drtasha.com. Tasha is spelled T-O-S-H-I-A. Okay. Y'all already know. don't even ask that question. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and IG at Dr. Tasha. And so again, you guys, as always, as I end every show, I want you guys to keep yourselves safe until we meet again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stemming in Stilettos. Please check out the show notes to get additional information about today's guest or today's topic. You can find the podcast on every major podcast platform. You can find additional information about Dr. Tasha at www.drtasha.com. Thanks again, and don't forget to tune in every Tuesday for the latest episode of Stemming in Stilettos.